Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for tuning into Paranormal Talk Radio. This is not the X-Files. We are not scientists. We are not mathematicians. We are certainly not school teachers. We are no experts. We are paranormal investigators who have come together to give our audience insight and educational subjects about the paranormal field. Join us live every Friday night at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio. Without further delay, here are your hosts, Matthew J. Haas, and his partner in crime, Tim Vickers.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another exciting episode of Paranormal Talk Radio. I'm back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your co-host, Matthew J. Haas, and alongside of me, my partner in crime, Mr. Tim Vickers. Tim, you did a wonderful job last week when I couldn't make it. Thank you for filling in.
Well, it's no problem. I'm glad I didn't break the show. Which is a possibility I could do.
No, you did a great job. You had a great guest. I listened to it. It's always a pleasure to welcome Dr. Charles Porterfield and his expertise. Was a great conversation. He's got a background in the pulmonary field, and his expertise is in sleep apnea and sleep paralysis. So, those kind of tie into paranormal investigations, because one can sometimes think they're having a paranormal experience when actually they have sleep issues.
Yes.
So, it's always good to hear his side of things. Tonight we have another great guest. Her name is Carolyn Daugherty. She is the author and writer of Carolyn's Creepy Corner, and she writes about a whole different variety of subjects pertaining to the paranormal field. But she's somewhat of a skeptic, I would think, and a lot like Kenny Biddle and a handful of others that we've had on our show. From a healthy perspective, and she's a great person to interact with, very knowledgeable. She's been in the field a long time. She's been researching and exploring paranormal claims for a while, about 20 years or so. So I'm excited to have her.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I want to correct my mistake from a few weeks ago, and she can talk maybe a little bit about the formula.
Yes.
I'm excited about the formula. I like that concept.
Yeah, I actually, I hope she doesn't mind, but I kind of came up with my own formula, which I wrote in my blog. So it kind of stemmed from her idea. I don't take credit for the idea. It's not my, original idea, which I did give her credit for. She came up with it first. In my opinion, me and Chip talked about this. When I was on Chip Reichenthal's show Monday night, there should be a formula. I think there should be a standard when it comes to investigations.
Well, I don't disagree with that. I think it was real funny. We have a thing that we say in the job that I do, and when I interview kids, we don't say we have a protocol. We say we have a semi-structured process. And why we say that is because protocol says that you follow steps 1, 2, 3, 4, regardless of how the situation is in front of you. A semi-structured process means that you can adjust as the situation needs. So, I like the idea, the concept of the semi-structured process. I like.
Yeah, I don't know if you read my process, but I think it's pretty good. From top to bottom, I kind of get into how a team should go in and address the investigation. And of course, but I talk about, you know, all kinds of things from before the investigation, the start of the investigation, during the investigation, and of course after the investigation, because it doesn't just start with the investigation itself. There's a whole bunch of things that are involved. And, you know, people just think, you know, it's the investigation and then that's it. There's a lot more to it. So, especially when it comes to private homes, you know, you really should follow up and, you know, make sure you're prepared to offer them services in the areas, you know, where needed. You know, if you end up, you know, finding that it's not paranormal.
Yeah. You should be ready to stand up and accept that responsibility
if you're
for that family too.
Yeah, exactly. Me and Tim stress that, you know, quite a lot. You know, because just, I mean, it's happening already. People are getting in trouble left and right. They are being prosecuted for all different things. And the day is going to come when a group goes into a private setting and, you know, they're going to be prosecuted or put on trial for incompetence.
Yeah. And it's going to be easy.
Well, the lawyers are going to love it.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be like swimming off the coast of Australia with, you know, cuts on your legs. You know, the sharks are, you're going to get hit.
Yeah.
You know, it's just going to be, you know, I hear all the time, you know, but we have a waiver signed. I can tell you, you know, you can have a waiver signed and it can afford you some protection. And you can afford the homeowner and the private residence owner some protection. However, waivers don't abdicate, you know, they don't release people from gross negligence. You know, you can sign a waiver to get on a transport van and say, well, we're not going to hold the driver or the company of the van, you know, responsible for any harm that happens to us. But if the driver of the van just finished a fifth of rum and, you know, and some illegal substances and then takes off while that person is on company time representing that company, that person is acting out of gross negligence to the contract. I'm telling you, it's not going to be hard. You know, of course, that's a very broad, you know, example of gross negligence.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just the way it is. You know, waivers are nice, and I certainly don't begrudge waivers and agreements and contracts between people. But to feel that you are immune from any civil or criminal liability because you have someone's promise on a signature, you know, you have a large dose of self assurance that is, you know, just fooling yourself.
Yeah. And unless you have a really good friend that's a lawyer that can word it in such a way where, you know, where it would sound better, unfortunately, the court's going to sit there and kind of laugh at you, and especially the judge, because first of all, well, in my opinion, you know, they're going to kind of laugh at you and go, well, you know, you're in there to try to, you know, document ghosts.
And, mm-hmm.
You know, it's like that's just not going to hold up well in court in the first place.
Well, you know, and I think, it's like when we had, you know, my friend DJ on, who I really like, you know, his angle from where he sees liability from people who investigate houses and private residences, he feels like the greatest liability won't come from anything about a ghost. He feels like when we talked to him, you know, he put out there, he said, your greatest liability is going to get hit from the time that you have someone in there that is dealing with what could possibly be a mental health issue. It might not be, but it might be.
Right.
And if it is a mental health issue and the people that were in there to help did not see that, and they don't have to be, you know, you don't have to be doctors, you know, you can see the situation, you can understand it, you can see the trouble, you know, if you don't make the appropriate calls to people, to agencies, to make referrals, to make sure that family gets the help that they need, then you've not done everything. You've skipped a part that you could be held in some trouble for. The other thing that we talked about, which is what I kind of think, in my opinion, this is just my opinion, and I have no statistics or anything to back it up. It's just my opinion, so I'll put that there. You know, I kind of wait for the day that someone tells a family, man, your house is so haunted. Look at this blue orb. You know, a blue orb means Satan was riding on top of it. You guys are in so much trouble. I see the day that somebody sells their house for less than market value and loses financial gain, or loses financially or has a financial loss because of their statement, and then later on finds out that it wasn't true, or the second owner, the next owner, finds out why they feel they have this haunting. And then I think you will find someone will ask for civil. That's a great movie. Good book.
Mm-hmm.
Ask for compensation through a civil court for what they lost.
Right.
It's not necessarily criminal.
No.
And I don't know, you know, how well criminal will go for whatever happens, unless there's just some type of personal property damage. But the civil cases is where I see a lot of it popping up.
Right. Kind of like a civil lawsuit. Kind of.
Yeah. And civil cases, you just need the preponderance of the evidence, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
Criminal, you need beyond a reasonable doubt.
Yep. And then, you know, I would suggest, you know, for those who haven't seen it, I've seen it, but it's based on a true story, The Exorcism of Emily Rose, where a priest was on a, you know, an exorcism case where he was trying to explore the girl's so-called possession of a demon. You know, she was possessed by a so-called demon, and he showed incompetence on his part as a priest to provide, you know, the proper services to her, because there was not enough evidence pointing that she was possessed, which is why I also think, like, these days, which is why it's now even more rare and extremely rare to run into a situation like that. But he got prosecuted by the family because eventually she died, and, you know, they held him responsible. And, you know, he got put in jail. So it was a great movie. You know, so in a way it kind of reflects on what, you know, what we do, even though, you know, we're not exercising anything, we're not exorcists, but, you know, it's the similarities are there.
Yeah, I haven't exercised anything in a long time. It would not hurt me to exercise some.
Oh, that's a whole nother ball game for me.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, that's, I've watched that movie. That's an interesting movie.
But it's along the lines of what we're trying to say. You know, it's like, you know,
yeah,
you know, you will be prosecuted. The family will hold you responsible. So, you know, if you're not providing that proper care, so when you go into those situations, you know, it's great, you're excited about it, but, you know, don't do it if you don't have enough knowledge, you know, of what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you can't care for the family before, during, or after, like I said earlier in the conversation, because if you can't, you shouldn't be doing it at all.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and the more I think about it, I mean, if you could just imagine the weight, the gravity of the situation, that you would go into a home and the family's already scared, the family's already concerned, and you tell them you have a ghost, and that ghost is mad at you. True or not, you know, how do you back that up later on if you have to?
Especially in court.
Yeah. How do you?
Not only are you trying to back it up with the family, but trying to do that in court, like, you know, with a jury, and, you know, and you know, these jurors are hand selected, you know, to prosecute these people.
Yeah. Yep. you know, wow. I mean, that's, if you think about the responsibility that you lay, you know, that you have, or you think about the consequences that you can put on somebody. And when, you know, my favorite, one of my favorite questions, how do you know? How do you know? And so when you tell somebody your house is haunted, you're in a lot of trouble, or your house is possessed, you know, something's here, how do you know? How have you ruled out every other possibility? And what do you do? What do you do after that? What do you do? Do you get somebody to bless the house? Okay, well, great. What if it doesn't work? You bless the house again? You know, you get some shrubbery and you wrap it in a string and you burn it, you know, in the house. Okay, great. Your house smells nice, but there's still stuff going on. You know, what do you do? What happens when you run out of options? And how many options are there to remove a spirit, you know?
Yeah.
And the options that are there that you do use, what's the evidence that it works? You know? Well, you know, there's lots of people that do it. Doesn't mean it works.
Well, that's the thing that bothers me about the field currently, Tim, is, you know, it's kind of sad in a way, but the majority of groups, and I'm not saying everybody, but a small handful of groups are going out there because they're seeing what other groups are doing. So they're copying that person and they're copying this person because, you know, well, this group says, well, you know, we're getting good results with this, so that's why we're doing it. And then, you know, you have another group that says, oh, okay, well, if that's the case, well, then we'll follow them and, you know, we'll do it that way. And, you know, but in all honesty, like, how do we know that's the proper way, you know?
Exactly. Boy, I tell you, we're just full of curmudgeon this evening, aren't we?
Oh, yeah, we're critiquing everything.
Oh, man, yeah. So, we're sunshine and rainbows tonight.
Yeah, well, you know, like, I don't know, what's been bothering me lately is, you know, I've been getting these emails, you know, quite a bit, you know, from potential clients that reach out to me and, you know, they're telling me, you know, this group's ruining this museum's reputation and, you know, they're going in here and they're causing damage to this and that, you know, causing vandalism. And you know, we're being associated to that thing because, you know, they're local teams, but yet we have nothing to do with those groups. And I'm kind of getting sick of, you know, being attached to what's going on there because, you know, we do have nothing to do with them. And we're more professional than that. Like, we're a group of mature adults that do respect where we investigate and who we're dealing with. And it just saddens me that, you know, that they're ruining the reputation of these places and, you know, they're now closing the doors, you know, to other people, you know, like us. And, you know, it just kind of, like, I don't know, burns my butt because we're working our butt off and we are out there trying to do the right thing. And when people are not, you know, it gets me in that mood.
Well, you know, I see things in a lot of things I see in terms of pendulum swings, I guess. You could put things in perspective that way. And certainly, you know, prior to a certain time and, you know, one certain show that kind of sparked everything that popped on the TV scene really swung the pendulum into a popularity area, into the field's wide open kind of thing. And, wave patterns, if you want to look at it that way, pendulum swings, you know, things can't stay up forever. And I kind of see that sometimes as a good thing because, you know, when things start getting bad, you know, it kind of clears out the weeds. And people who are left have to think of different ways to handle the new stressors, the new obstacles, the new barriers. And yeah. So when you're forced to think and you're forced to problem solve, I think things get better, you know, instead of just staying status quo.
And in a way, I don't know about you, Tim, but I do feel like they are getting better a little bit. I think, like, the bad element are starting to weed itself out a little by little. You know, I think the more serious individuals and groups that are in it for the research and in it to really improve our standards and our qualitative results, you know, I think it is getting, you know, in a more better direction, in a more serious direction, because, you know, people like the Kenny Biddles and, you know, the Melodies and the Lewises and, you know, a lot of people out there who are, not that it's their purpose, but when they expose people that are doing the wrong things, I just feel like it's slowly and quietly kind of fading out a little bit.
Yeah, that's good. I like that.
So
and it's not just the wrong things that I think that they point out.
No.
I think it's the ones that take advantage of situations. You know, and I know, you know, I won't say who because you know, we're real careful about, you know, not calling out different teams or anybody, which is fine. Today, you know, the great musician B.B. King passed away.
Yeah, that breaks my heart. I was a huge fan.
Well, already there's a group or an organization or an individual that is putting out, you know, EVPs and what's the spirit boxes? Lord help us all. But, you know, they're putting out that they've already been in contact with B.B. King and putting stuff out saying...
Good God.
Yes. So, you know, that is nothing but, you know, that's an attention hound. And,
yeah.
You know, I think that that's disrespectful, and it's disrespectful to the family. I mean, he passed away yesterday, and, you know, they have this organization has their own Facebook, and they're just pumping out, getting lots of hits, and, you know.
That's terrible.
Yeah, that's what I say. You know, and it happened with Robin Williams, too. You know, the same organization did the same thing not a day after.
Oh, man.
Putting out things that, you know, he's talking to them through the spirit box. And, I, you know, it's that type of stuff that I like seeing caught.
Yeah.
Called out.
Yep. Because they're deliberately looking for the attention, and without the proper research and the proper method, you know, like you said, they're just a bunch of attention whores, and, you know, that's all they're in it for. Trying to make a quick name for themselves by, you know, doing that off of somebody famous like that.
Yeah, I don't care for that. Nope. You know, but it, like the people you were talking about, you know, that's what I like seeing get called out.
Yep.
You know, like, who knows what we do, what we do. I don't know if any of us think any of it's right, or if we know if anything that we do is accurate, valid, or can sustain any type of review that we do.
Yeah.
You know, but I think the vast majority of us in reality don't do things for purely selfish gain. And it's that type of situation, and they pump out false stuff.
Yep.
For personal gain that is bothersome.
Yeah. I do want to send a really loud message for those who are listening to this particular message.
It'll be loud.
Oh, yeah. You know, for example, you know, look at Carole Malone, okay? That's a hot topic right now. You know, she tried to get away with something, you know, whether she didn't know what she was doing or, you know, despite her intentions, she didn't do right by her clients nor by her audience and those who wanted to come to her event. And when it comes, I mean, you know, it's a lot to do with theft, stealing. There were thousands of dollars involved, and, you know, eventually she was prosecuted because there was a lot of money involved. And, you know, I don't know all the details of the story. I read some of the articles briefly. You know, but you know, she portrayed herself to be somebody who she's not, and it caught up to her. And, you know, I want this to be a loud message, because for those who are making them out themselves to be somebody who they're not, it will come back and bite you in the butt. And, you know, this lady got arrested. She's going to be put in jail. And, you know, for how long, who knows, but she's in a lot of trouble. The law will follow you if you break the law.
The long arm of the law. You can run.
But you can't hide.
Oh, you can hide for a little bit. But you're going to stumble. They always stumble.
Hell yeah. So that's all I'm going to say about that. So hopefully my message was loud and clear.
I don't know that situation. I've seen some information about that passed around. I've read about it a little bit. But is that the one that somebody said their name was London Knight?
I'm not sure. I didn't hear about that. But
yeah, I can't remember that. I read an article about somebody, I think it was tied to an event in Tombstone. Anyway, they addressed themselves, they gave themselves the name of London Knight, and I couldn't help but think, if somebody told me their name was London Knight, which is a cool name, by the way, but I would think, I'm not too sure about that.
Yeah.
London Knight.
So, anyway, for those who are joining us late, we have a great guest tonight. Her name is Carolyn Doherty. She is the author and writer of Carolyn's Creepy Corner. She's also written, I think, for other skeptic online magazines, well-known magazines. And, you know, she has a great background. You know, she's been doing this a long time, as long as I have, actually. And it's just good to talk to somebody who's been in it as long as we have. And I'm sure she can kind of understand where we come from when we share our grievances.
I like that. It's a nicer way to put it.
Right?
Yeah.
So can't wait to have her on. We'll have her on in a little bit. But I don't know. I wasn't here last week. Timmy did a great job.
Well, like I said, glad I didn't break the show.
So, yeah, I've been, having a lot of investigations. Seem to be like every other weekend. Sometimes, unfortunately, you know, I got to schedule them on a Friday night during our show, because sometimes my clients can't always provide a Saturday night. So, but it was fine. But for those who want to know, how did it go? It was horrible. I sat in 3 hours of traffic on the George Washington Bridge for an area that should have only taken me an hour to get to.
Mm.
it was nuts.
It was miserable, wasn't it?
Yeah. So it like took a lot of, you know, it took like 2 hours out of our investigating time that we had toward it. But we had left a little bit after 5 o'clock. We didn't get there until 8:15. So yeah, it was a long trip.
I'm sure sitting in traffic for that long made it just that much more enjoyable when you got there.
Yeah, it was. We got some interesting things that happened that night, so I can't wait to go back and, you know, share it with my clients. So, but anyway, going to go ahead and get Carolyn in so she's listening. She could turn the show down in the background so we don't echo.
It's a demon. It's a demon, I tell you.
Right.
There's no other explanation.
Okay, so let's try to get her in. Okay, it's dialing.
It's dialing, that's good.
Dial tone is good. Yep. So, as soon as she pops in, we'll get things on, get things rolling. Rolling. Still dialing. Bear with me. Yeah, we did this on Chip Show Monday night.
Yeah, I got, well, I've only been able to catch the first hour of that.
Hi, Carolyn.
Hello.
How you doing? Welcome to Paranormal Talk Radio. How's everything?
I'm good.
Very good. I hear us in the background. I don't know if you have a...
If
you could turn it down, that'd be great.
I think I turned it off.
Okay, great.
You're good.
Thank you. Well, welcome to the show. Thank you for being our guest. Delighted to have you. We're honored. You have a great blog. You've been writing Carolyn's Creepy Corner for quite a while. You've been writing for some time. And we're kind of big followers of your work. You know, you're a great writer. You put some great emphasis on things. And, you know, you've been doing this a long time.
Well, thanks for having me. I really appreciate the invitation.
Yeah, sure. Why don't you tell our audience a little bit about yourself and what got you started to write Carolyn's Creepy Corner?
Well, my story is pretty cliche. You know, I was a weird kid and liked spooky stuff, you know, the Hammer movies and, you know, just like the Abbott and Costello stuff. And I gravitated towards that kind of genre. And then one day I was talking about ghosts with my grandmother, and she says, well, you really don't have to worry about the dead. It's the living you have to be afraid of. And I asked her what she meant by that, and so she told me her personal experience where she felt she had seen the spirit of her father shortly after he died. And so that day kind of transformed my idea of ghosts as generic monsters like vampires or werewolves or mummies or whatever, to they were once people. So it kind of piqued my interest to search further. You know, why do some people linger? Why do some people not? What is the afterlife? So that kind of prompted, I guess, a lifelong interest.
Cool. And that's pretty much what got you into writing Carolyn's Creepy Corners, or?
Well, I started my blog because... I was doing informal investigations, I think, like how a lot of us started with some friends.
Sure.
You know, back in high school and college, you went to abandoned buildings or went to cemeteries, and we didn't have a clue what we were doing, but we kind of copied what we saw on TV or read in books and called that investigating. And
I
then,
did that, too.
Yeah. And, I mean, and I consider myself a skeptic now. But, I mean, I came into it as a woo-woo believer in everything. So
yeah. We all kind of start there at some point.
Yeah,
exactly. I'm right there with you. That's exactly how I started.
You know, and I watched all those shows, and if Peter James said, there's a little girl in the corner, I went, oh, sure, okay. You know, I didn't question it. And so I was really excited. And when Ghost Hunters came on board, I was like, well, gee, I guess anybody can do it. You didn't have to have a degree in parapsychology or be a scientist or all that. And so a lot of groups were cropping up, and it's like, well, why can't I do that? I'd like to do that. But I also, from my background as an educator, I wanted to do it, quote, the right way. I didn't want to go in there and just, you know, regurgitate what I heard on TV or read in a book. I didn't want to risk misleading people. So I started doing my own research and sought out websites with people who were more experienced than me. And so that's how I started learning and started going towards more critical thinking instead of just accepting everything at face value. And so when I started getting more into actual investigating and joining a group and taking it a lot more seriously, and learning a lot from people who did have experience in photography or audio engineering or physics and that type of thing, I started to learn very quickly that there is a lot of misinformation out there.
Absolutely.
And I think, unfortunately, the balance is a lot more misinformation than accurate information. So I kind of wanted to counteract that in a constructive way. You know, just to inform and put information out there for people to check the links, check the books and the articles that I put up there, for them to check out and learn on their own, because I don't claim to be an expert. I'm just sharing information. And again, I wanted to do it in an educational way. There's a lot of people out there. Some skeptics kind of go, in my opinion, overboard where they are hypercritical. They go into bashing. They put up teams' photos and just thrash them. And I didn't think that was a constructive way of doing it.
I agree with that.
Again, I was an educator, and we learned you don't attack the child or the child's opinion or ideas. You know, what you want to do is you address the behavior. You know, you don't attack the person. You address the behavior or the idea.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's true in intellectual debate. So it would be hypocritical for me to say, hey, I'm promoting logic and reason and critical thinking, and then go on to commit one of the most common logical fallacies, which is ad hominem attack.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really careful about not name-calling or bashing teams, at least publicly now. Privately, that's a whole different story. But, you know, but publicly I try to keep it to a degree where I want it to be productive. I don't want it to be counterproductive and destructive. I want to get the ideas out there.
And that's cool. And, you know, in a way, I like kind of wish I was brought up that way when I first myself, you know, kind of started learning about things. Although when I first was born into the field, I was kind of the opposite. I was, you know, taught the proper method from really good people, and I've always kind of stuck to those guns a little bit. But in the beginning, I was the same way as you guys. You know, every bark, tick, and creak, like I always say, I thought it was something paranormal.
Oh, yeah.
But now it's like my team, we're so particular about our investigations. Like they kind of get on my case sometimes. They're like, you know, yelling at me like, all right, Matt, we know. Because I'm always careful now, like how I investigate things. And, you know, I look for every little thing to make sure, like, we cover our butt, because that's what I'm more worried about these days rather than, you know, anything else. Because, you know, what me and Tim were talking about earlier, I don't want to be that one person that gets in trouble sitting in the courtroom and, you know, while they're putting cuffs on me and, you know what I'm saying?
And a lot of people kind of go into it for ego, because they want to be someone important in a fringe field. And I kind of went into it where I still had my curiosity. I wanted to know what was going on out there. At that time, at one time, I had this idea that I wanted to, quote, help people. But in doing so, I felt there was a little bit of a responsibility. And so, again, that's why I was really careful about what I was claiming. I mean, I came into it, I never claimed, you know, made claims like we can declare this place haunted, or we can declare this place not haunted, or we can tell you exactly what's going on. I always said, look, we look for natural causes first, and I always said that these are possible explanations. I mean, I couldn't say 100%, you know, this is your generator causing this and stuff. I just offered alternative natural explanations. And on stuff that I couldn't explain, whether it was because of my lack of expertise or access to information at the time, I was also careful to say, I'm not saying this is paranormal. It's just we don't know what this is right now. And, you know, we have to look into it further. So, and sometimes, unfortunately, you get homeowners that's not what they want to hear. They want to hear that.
Yeah, it's true.
They own the next Amityville Horror, and, you know, are very disappointed when, you know, you look at all their pictures for them and say, no, that's a hair, and that's not a vortex to hell, I'm sorry.
I had something similar. I can relate to that, because I had a private residence investigation a couple of years ago. It was an elderly folk that shared kind of like a one-floor, but it was like a, you know, like an apartment, but it was separated into two separate apartments. But this guy was so imminent about, you know, I'm experiencing this when I come out of my bedroom, and I got this cold feeling, and I know there's somebody walking by, and I'm by myself. And so, you know, we investigated, and, you know, we found out that actually there was a dirt devil right at the end of his kitchen counter, which was, like, right next to his bedroom door.
Huh.
And this dirt devil, believe it or not, that the EMF reading off of this thing was like off the charts.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there is a known fact, you know, from the environmental, institute that provides the information for EMF. There's a good website, you know, that tells people information about how people can get sick from high EMF levels and stuff. And I guarantee you, like, that's why he kept, you know, feeling these sensations.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept, like, telling this guy, listen, we're gonna do a little experiment. Take your dirt mammal and move it all across the other side of the room away from your bedroom door and see if these sensations stop. And, you know, he was kind of stubborn about it because, you know, he didn't think it was the dirt devil, but I told him, you know, just try it out and see how things go. And what do you know? It was that damn dirt devil.
And there still is some controversy about EMFs and how they affect people, but I still think it's something to look into. And we did have a case where there was a child having nightmares and seeing things and stuff, and the clock radio next to his bed, next to his pillow, was older than me. And, of course, it threw off, you know, all sorts of EMF. And so we just suggested to the parents, you know, either move it or get a new one. And, you know, when we checked back a couple months later, it seemed to, and I know correlation is not causation, but it seemed to alleviate a lot of his problems. So that's why I haven't given up on the whole EMF correlation yet. I mean, I'd like to see more conclusive studies. But, you know, certainly I still explore that too.
Yeah. I just, you know, wanted to see if that was, you know, what was causing his experiences because,
yeah,
you know, the readings were so high, like they were like over 100.
Yeah.
You know, and this dirt devil is like this only like little like vacuum or whatever.
Oh yeah, I used to have one. Yeah.
But you'd be surprised, like those devices, like how much EMF they give off. I was showing an example to my wife the other night. We were messing around with her alarm clock, and it's a little tiny alarm clock. But I was doing some EMF readings off of it, and I said, sweetheart, I said, we got to get a different alarm clock. I said, this can't be all that healthy either for you, sleeping next to an alarm clock that's giving off over really high EMF readings while you're sleeping at night.
Yeah.
You know?
You know, and I mentioned that because I wrote a book based on my blog a couple of years ago, and I did mention in a chapter where I had an experience at a relative's house where I woke up in the middle of the night, and this is in the high desert, so I didn't have a sheet on or anything, but it felt like someone touched my ankle to my hip with a really cold finger. And, of course, I sat up straight, and at first I thought it was one of my relatives who can be jerks, scaring the crap out of me. And I flipped on the light, and, of course, there's nobody there. And so, of course, I'm convinced this place is haunted. Well, then later I learned about things like EMS and IEFs, which is experiment-inducing fields that can be caused by both man-made and natural sources. Well, this property runs right along San Andreas Fault. So there's, you know, natural EMF there. Plus, the overhead fan was old, and I'm sure if I had an EMF detector, I'm sure it would have been thrown off, you know, all sorts of things. So, you know, now I look back at it and kind of laugh and, you know, at myself, but I could see where people who don't research that stuff can just conclude, okay, well, there's something in that house.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I still think to this day, like, people are kind of jumping to conclusions that when there's, like, an unusual fluctuation of EMF, that it must be a ghost or a spirit present, without, you know, coming to think, oh, could it be something from the outside? Could it be a natural EMF that we don't see with our own eyes? Because that's possible. You know,
right.
There are EMFs all over the place.
Well, that, and they're not static. They fluctuate. A lot of people have this idea that, well, because in your house, EMFs know some sort of boundary, and they don't. You can be picking up something down the road. Also, a lot of people don't look into what can make it fluctuate. You know, a huge moving van going by can fluctuate, can cause little fluctuations. Elevators going up and down can cause fluctuations. There's a lot of people, I remember we were on a case, converters compressors rather, you don't hear them coming on, but the motor cycles before it actually comes on, like in a furnace or an air conditioner. So you're not hearing anything, but for a minute or so or several minutes, it's cycling. And that's when the spikes come. And you'll get a lot of people going, well, the air conditioner wasn't on at that time.
Yeah.
You know, but it's like, well, yeah, but if it was cycling, see, that's when, you know, and so people don't kind of look beyond the basics. And
yeah.
And that's why I encourage people to get their information outside of the field. Ask people who are electricians. Ask people who are photographers. Don't just, you know, depend on other ghost hunters, even if they have a lot more experience than you, because sometimes it's kind of like the blind leading the blind.
Yep, exactly. And then the other thing that aggravates me a little bit, you know, because, well, everybody kind of poo-poos the whole EMF thing, so everybody's like, all right, let's try to build this other device that detects gases or... I was just bringing that up in the chat room, actually, because there was an episode where they introduced this meter that detects gas, and I don't know which one of them actually had gas, but it the meter went off, and I said, oh boy, here we go, now we're gonna have like the fart detector going around.
You know, yeah, there's all sorts of speculation out there and hypotheses that, you know, really don't have a foundation in sound science, and that's kind of the problem. And I think there's a quote out there says, you know, the enemy of knowledge is not ignorance, it's the illusion of knowledge. And, you know, I totally agree with that.
Yeah, definitely. The one thing we brought up, Tim and I, earlier was, I know you don't take, you know, the whole credit for it. You said there are probably other people that also thought of it, but the formula that you brought up not that long ago, I kind of came up with my own version. I don't know if you saw what I wrote, but I definitely agree with you. What do you feel should be the standard formula for investigations?
Well, you know, my formula that I was talking about in the article, and I'll answer your question in a minute, I promise. The formula I was talking about in my article, I think it was called Stop the Insanity, is that we've seen the same formula in pop culture for decades now. And the problem is it's not working. It's not getting us any closer to answers or new information or anything. And that old formula, you can see it in old movies like from the 40s and 50s. I think I cited Ghost Ship from 1952. And, you know, the formula is there's ghostly happenings. The family doesn't know what to do. They contact some university scientist from somewhere. He comes in with a lot of gadgety, sciencey gear. And then, you know, when he can't figure it out, because he's talking about vibrations and energy and all this stuff, but he has to call in help from a, quote, psychic. And of course, it's always the real deal. You know, they qualify it that this is the real deal. And then, of course, they solve what's going on with the ghost, you know, what if it's unfinished business or what happened to the ghost, and they resolve it, and everybody's happy. So we've seen that over and over in pop culture over the years. And in one of my articles called Ghosts in Pop Culture, I mean, I even mentioned more recent movies like Ghostbusters and The Shining and Poltergeist, the original Poltergeist. We see that same formula, and it's really ingrained in our consciousness. So then years later, when we see it repeated on so-called reality ghost hunting shows, it looks right to us. Because it was also on Unsolved Mysteries and In Search Of. So that same formula has been repeated over and over. But the problem is, thus far, it's not getting us the answers we want. You know, a lot of the people who are coming in, you guys have already talked about it, they're bringing in sciencey looking gear that has no validity. Yeah, I know you guys talked about things like the ghost box and the ovulus and things that are still being used and people still talking flashlights.
Oh, the flashlight.
It just blows your mind that people watch it on TV and some of them go out and copy it and start their own ghost hunting thing.
Yep.
So that's what I meant about the formula. And as far as answering your question about what I think the formula is, it's very simple. Critical thinking. Common sense, critical thinking. Don't take things at face value. You know, research, ask questions. And a lot of people say, you know, question everything. And I agree with that. And some people think skepticism is you doubt and just blatantly dismiss. And that's not what it is. You're just testing the validity of claims. You know, that's what skepticism is. You're not just automatically dismissing. You're just testing it. And that's what I think, I hope more people will start doing.
Yeah. I always tell Kenny when we have him on and when I talk to him in private, you know, skepticism always gets a bad rep.
Yeah.
They associate it with people, well, you know, on behalf of...
They mistake it for cynicism.
Yeah, and there's a, you know, clear, distinct, you know, difference between the two. So cynics are just people who don't believe whatsoever, and it doesn't matter, you know, how solid of an explanation or evidence you may present to them. They're just not going to believe it no matter what.
And the other part of it is people don't understand that even if a skeptic doesn't accept a claim based on the information at the time, they remain open to changing their mind if new information comes forward that validates it.
Yep.
So when people say closed-minded skeptic, well, a true skeptic really isn't closed-minded because they remain open as long as you can provide objective information that can verify it.
Yep.
You know, I think a good example of that is the Skeptic magazine itself. You know, during the times, and of course it's still a hotly debated topic, but climate change, you know, they were kind of against that for a long time. Early when I first started following and watching and reading Michael Shermer and Skeptic magazine, mm-hmm. and they came out. I mean, they did it, and that's probably my biggest jump towards respect for them is when they came out and they said, you know what, guys, we're changing on this.
Yeah.
You know, there's a flood of evidence coming in that's very credible. We have to go the other way on it.
Yeah.
And I love that they publicly did that. And that's when I got the respect. Now, some people changed and they didn't see it as mm-hmm. a good thing, but I saw it as a very good thing because when they got the evidence that met what they were looking for, they publicly said, hey, we're with this now. I mean, we've seen what we needed to see, and we've looked at what we had to look, and we've checked what people gave us. You know, I'm changing. And I think, yeah, you hit a great point. And I think that's a point that's often missed when people hear skeptics.
And that's what scientific methodology is about. We all have our own biases. We all carry, you know, we have our own conclusions, we all come from different backgrounds, and so we all have our own ideas and agendas. And so that's what the scientific method is there for, to be as objective as possible. Again, so if you're a true skeptic, you have to kind of, you know, let go of your ego and your agenda and your preconceived notions and just look at what the data tells you.
Yes, I agree. Absolutely.
And at the same time, I mean, I keep an open mind. Again, I was a woo-woo believer, and so I still ask, what if? You know, because when people tell me, well, you don't believe in ghosts anymore, I said, look, I've never said, ever said I don't believe in ghosts. I've never said ghosts don't exist. I'm saying I don't know, and I haven't seen anything as of yet to verify it.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
I hope to someday.
That would be great, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I'm one jumping up and down.
Yes.
What would it be for you, Carolyn, as somewhat of a skeptic? You know, I've always wanted to ask somebody, you know, like, what would it be enough for you to call something that you had that experience where you could say, you know, that could be something?
Well, so, and I'm actually writing an article about this right now, but I did have an experience right after my father passed away, and I'm not going to share what the experience is publicly just for a couple reasons. One, I have nothing to back it up, so So there was no one else there. There was no tape recorder. You know, I wasn't being recorded.
Right.
So, you know what? It's just another story. And if I tell it to true believers, they're going to say, woo, that's exciting, and that was probably communication. If I tell it to skeptics, they're going to say, ooh, that was a neat coincidence, but it's just a coincidence. So really, it's not going to change anybody's mind because I have nothing to back it up. I got nothing. The other side of that, too, is if it is something that happened that I want to believe, I would like to believe it was a form of contact, it's between me and my dad.
Right.
And I don't have a need to use that experience to serve an agenda. So it's something that I just have to take a step back and say, well, if I choose to believe this, then I just need to just be grateful for it and cherish the experience for what it is. And I had talked to a psychologist friend of mine, this is a while back, right after it happened, and, you know, he said it's common for people to think they have these kind of experiences or have these experiences, but he says what wasn't important was whether or not it's truly a paranormal communication. What's important is that it means something to you. It's keeping the person's memory alive, and it eases the pain of the loss somewhat. And I think in a bigger picture world, I like that explanation.
I like the way you put that. That was well put. The way you explained that, that was just, you know, I appreciate the way you put that.
But as far as objective evidence, for me to say, yes, ghosts exist and go out publicly, I mean, it would have to be something that was verified by multiple sources that, you know, passed peer review, that was tested and could be reproduced somehow, you know.
Right.
You know, it would have to pass scientific muster.
Right.
You know?
Are you still investigating in the group? Are you still researching? And
I'm kind of on my own right now. You know, when I was with the group, I was continuing my journey of really researching natural causes, you know, physiological or psychological and environmental causes. And I was writing my blog. I was administrator for a logic-minded website. So I was kind of going further towards the skeptic and really being cautious of what I claimed to be paranormal or possibly paranormal. And it was just in conflict with what some of the group wanted. I think they weren't ready to let go of their flashlights and their ovuluses. And to me, it was just a big conflict for me to be there. And I'm not saying I'm right and they were wrong. It just, you know, I just didn't feel like I fit anymore.
Sure, sure.
So it was just one of those things that, you know, I'm so grateful for the experience I had with them, and I learned so much in a short amount of time. I just had to kind of go on my merry little way because I just couldn't, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
I understand.
Yeah.
I completely understand.
Yeah. That flashlight thing kills me.
You know,
you said something earlier and I think it really spoke to me because I am there, and that is when you said at some point it dawned on you that everybody does the same thing and everybody seems to be getting the same results. There's nothing that's changing.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of think, you know, at some point that's where I got to. Now, I'm still with my group, and we're really close friends, and we have really great discussions, and, you know, we've been together so long, and plus we had a work relationship prior to and then during.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we feel pretty good about just telling each other exactly what we feel, and we're good with it. You know what I mean? So we
actually
have that.
I was the newcomer, so okay. I was relatively the newcomer that came to the group, so I think a lot of people wanted to kind of cling to their what they were more comfortable with, and okay, go talk to the flashlight.
That's important. Yeah, I got right where you were too. And at some point, I just kind of, you know, you step back and you go, "Yeah, we got to change. We got to change what we're doing. We can't expect whatever's out there, whatever it is, to change itself to meet our standard. You know, we have to change what we do to better understand the environment that we're looking at."
Yep.
And what kind of drives me nuts about some groups, and I won't say all, but it amazes me how they're so quick to judge and criticize other groups and like, "Oh, we're so much better." But then they're employing techniques or using gadgets that are just as bad in a different way. But the second you say, "Well, wait a minute, you know, you guys are doing this," then they become hyper defensive instead of maybe taking a step back and, "Oh, okay, well, maybe we should take a second look at that." You know, and it just amazes me that there's so much ego and, you know, pissing contests out there that it's just, you know, that's another reason why I don't think we're progressing, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I totally know what you mean. I wrote something not that long ago on Paranormal Warehouse. Tim, I don't know if you read what I had written, which is a great website to go to, paranormalwarehouse.com. You know, it's where me and Tim kind of met and we got together, and that's how we started this whole thing. But anyway, you know, along the lines of what you're saying, Carolyn, is, you know, like, we're all, like, doing the same crap, like, over and over and over and over. And if it's, like, really not enough to, like, prove anything except for, like, you know, like, data for this or data for that, you know, and some of these gadgets are cool to collect that data and document this and that, you know, and that's all it's really designed to do. But how is it really proving anything? And if it's not proving anything,
still doing it.
You know, why aren't we moving forward to different technology that could, you know, produce more better results? You know, why are people coming up with ideas, you know, to get past that point in the field? You know, I don't see anybody doing that. And like you said, it's becoming more of a pissing contest.
Yeah.
And, you know, everybody's just boosting their egos.
And worse, people are continuing to do things that have been pretty much soundly debunked. I mean, why are people still investigating in the dark? Why are people still sitting around and saying, "Hey, if someone's here, make a sound"? You know, I mean, that just sets you up for so much, you know, confirmation bias. It's not even funny.
Yep.
You know, why are people buying the cheapest recorders possible and walking around and talking with them in their hands as they're doing a session?
Yep.
Why are people still doing this? Why are people not taking control shots, you know, in well-lit conditions? Why are they not taking comparison shots at the same time? You know, because it's much more fun to just go snap happy at an investigation and pretend they can catch something that way.
Yep.
It just, you know, and then they get mad when they show this picture that has no reference, has nothing to back it up. There's no reference or video or comparison shots or anything for anybody to make any reference to. And they get mad when you say, "Well, I'm sorry, that doesn't convince me."
Hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't understand why people are doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results.
And I've told you this, and I've told Kenny this too. You know, I'm watching these videos and people post their stuff, like, you know, whether it be social media or, you know, wherever. But, you know, all I see are a bunch of groups sitting in a dark room asking questions. And if they hear a noise, one person will jump like 3 feet out of their chair and they'll sit back down in the chair or they'll stand up and go, "What was that?" And then but not do anything about it. And,
yeah.
Like, go investigate it. Like, if you want to prove something, find out what caused you to jump 3 feet in the air.
Yeah. Well, and that's the other thing, too. I mean, and there's a well-known investigator who's a nice person, and I'm not going to mention his name, but I remember this is one of the things that drives me nuts. There was a claim that he went to investigate. This lady heard a baby crying in her house. She had an old house, and it sounded like a baby crying in it. So he came in, and he brought in his recorders and set up his recorders, and yes, he recorded something that sounded like a baby crying. And that was it. Okay, well then, what made that sound? That's my question. okay, was it something in the environment? Was it something mechanical, especially when she said it happened this around the same time every day? Was it something organic? Was it an animal somewhere? You know, don't just say, okay, yeah, we recorded this sound that sounds like what you said, and then leave.
Yeah, they're taking it at face value.
That's not investigating.
Nope.
That didn't give her any answers other than she's not going bonkers. There is a legitimate noise she's hearing, but it doesn't tell you what you're experiencing. And that, unfortunately, is, at least in my experience, is the majority of teams. Oh, yeah, we heard the same thing you saw or you heard, or we took a blurry picture and might have been what you saw in the hallway, and they leave these poor people in the lurch, wondering what the hell's in their house, you know?
Yeah. That stuff really bothers me. I don't know if you heard us talk about this in previous episodes, but I've brought this up before, but if you haven't heard of this, Carolyn, but I had a guy, a group called me up, and, you know, they sent me an email saying, you know, this lady needs some help. You know, she's like over in Ohio or something. It's not really an area that I investigate because I'm here on Long Island, a little far for me to get to. But I have connections that, you know, I network with different kinds of groups and people. So I said, you know, let me see if I can reach out. But I was told that there was a gentleman that was kind of near her that called her up, and she explained to him, you know, what was going on over the phone. I guess he did an interview over the phone, and, you know, which is fine. You know, you're supposed to do that. But he tells the lady that she has a demon in her home.
Oh, yay.
And I'm sitting here like, did he investigate? Did he call the church? Did he get an exorcist? You know, like you know, how do you get these facts over a phone call?
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing. That brings up another case that I a friend of mine was talking to me about some while back, and I'm actually including it in an article, where he was telling me there was a group that came in, and one of their members, who is, quote, a skeptic, you know, he's the skeptic of the group.
That always cracks me up.
He suddenly felt cold and really tired and had foggy thinking. And so the group concludes there's a negative energy at the house. So I'm thinking, well, what did he eat that day?
Mm-hmm.
You know, was it low blood sugar? Was it something environmental? Because we know infrasound can affect people. There's different things that in the environment that can affect people.
Mm-hmm.
So did they look into any of that before scaring the hell out of their client, who, by the way, didn't suspect anything negative before? They just thought, you know, they had the run-of-the-mill ghost hanging out. So what did this, in my opinion, this group do? They didn't help anybody. They made a situation worse, in my opinion, because they called, you know, based on very little information, because somebody didn't feel good. Oh, must be a demon. Oh, okay. You know. Look how important they look.
I think there's just, like, too much assumption. There's too many jumping to conclusions. You know, I just think, honestly, these are people who are more into it for, like, you know, the wrong reasons. Like, they're in it for more of the thrill, you know, to see what they can document. And they're not really in it to help these people, because if they were, they wouldn't be doing these things.
Well, and the other thing of it is, and I think you guys, one of you mentioned Adam Bly earlier today. Is that right?
I think I did, actually.
Okay. Well, I went to a seminar of his several years ago. And the interesting thing he said was, in his opinion, now whether you believe in demonology or not is beside the point for what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
He believes the majority of these shows, the reality TV shows, the ghost hunting shows, he predicted they were going to go much darker and they were going to exploit the demonic. And he felt it was going to, you know, create much more fear within the community and much more misidentification. Because in his opinion, and again, whether you believe in it or not, he's a demonologist. In his opinion, the vast majority of claims are actually psychological, not even paranormal. And then the small percentage that he believes are paranormal, even a smaller percentage might be demonic. And this is coming from a demonologist.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So the scary thing is he was right. You look at all these shows that have come out since then, and, you know, someone with a lot of hair gel in their hair says they get pushed, and, well, there's a demon here, and so everybody jumps on the demon bandwagon.
Yeah. There was a gentleman, I don't know if you're familiar with him. We talked about it Monday night when I was on Chip Reichenfeld's show and Understanding the Fringe. But we talked about what Mark Hives calls the ghost effect. And we call that the ghost effect, where you have a group going into an investigation and somebody says, you know, oh, I think it's a negative, you know, this and that. Or they'll call and spew something out loud, and then it affects the entire group that's with them. And then they all, like you said, jump on the bandwagon.
Oh, it's just classic textbook priming.
Yes,
that's what,
priming.
It's
mm-hmm.
priming. And actually, when I was in my group, and this made me a little less popular, but I thought it was a good experiment, when we were training new people, I came up with the idea of when we were doing a training session, we gave them legitimate claims that the owner said about the building, and then we made up stuff. We made up a story. I think at the time it was there was a little girl that got murdered there. You know, and of course that, you know, that's one of the biggest emotional hot buttons there is oh, poor little girl. So we had our investigators do what, you know, the EVP sessions and take pictures and stuff. And sure enough, at the end of the sessions, we sat down and, well, what'd you feel, or what did you take pictures of, or did you experience anything? Sure enough, we had quite a few people heard a little girl's voice. Someone said they saw a little shadow figure about the size of a little girl. And, you know, it was just interesting. So when we've told them there was no little girl, you know, they were not happy with us.
Not surprised.
But it proved our point that if you take claims at face value, you are, you know, you're impeding the investigation. You know, you cannot take claims at face value. And you have to be careful of priming and expectation. Because if you go into a place thinking that you're going to see a Civil War soldier, then that weird little shadow in the corner of your eye is going to be a Civil War soldier. I mean, we know that. We, you know, neuroscientists have shown that.
Yep. And by the way, I love Adam Bly's work. I did meet him in person. And the reason I brought him up, I didn't bring him up on the show today, but on my Facebook I brought him up because we're going to have a guest coming up who's an author of Demon of Brownsville Road. He was on a previous show of The Exorcist Files, and I had watched an episode with this gentleman in it, and I was really intrigued by his story because he worked closely with Adam Bly. Like I said, Adam Bly is a very intense demonologist. He does not sugarcoat things whatsoever. He's really not into the media. He doesn't like paranormal investigators, is the impression that I got, because, you know, they open up things that they shouldn't open up, and he doesn't really want anything to do with that. I tried to get him as a guest on our show once, and he just, you know, wasn't really into the whole media thing. And I was actually shocked to see him on TV because of his, you know, of his standard, a man of his standards, because...
Well, he started out on Paranormal State. He was on the pilot, I believe.
Yeah.
And I remember him saying, at least in the seminar I attended, he was saying they were kind of exploiting the dark, the demonic, and that's why he walked away, because he felt they were more, I won't say glorifying it, but the way that they were highlighting it was attracting a lot more attention than it needed to. And again, his fear was it was going to create more fear out there than help people. So that's what he told us and why he walked away. So I don't know. And at the conference I was at, he didn't seem to hang out with the rest of them. He was, you know, from what I remember, he was just kind of doing his own thing and not really participating and the investigations and stuff. So.
I feel like he's doing it for the right thing. You know, he's all for it, you know, as far as that. And You know, like I said, he doesn't sugarcoat anything, and he's not into, you know, embellishing, or, you know, he wants to, like, send his message out there, like, loud and clear, you know, kind of, you know, about, like, what it really is, and, you know, the way he explains things and stuff. It's really intense. Like, people really have to follow his work, because I don't know if you've ever been on his website, but it's like, holy cow.
I look for more rational. Now, even though I was raised in a religion that, you know, believes in that, you know, the more I've done research and stuff, I've kind of moved away from that. And again, I don't know. I don't know either way. I'm not saying that's not out there, but I really am interested in medical reasons. I've looked into schizophrenia and other disorders that people, you know, see and hear things. And again, if they come from a religious background, they are far more susceptible to have those kind of hallucinations as people who do not. So I find that interesting.
Yeah, definitely is.
They're primed from childhood.
Right. And again, like Michael Shermer explains about cognitive bias, and our brains will do weird things to hang on to whatever belief we're comfortable with. Even when there's facts thrown at us saying, well, this may not be true, our brains will fight that.
Yeah, and I think it's fair to say we all do that.
Oh, yeah, everyone does that, yeah.
Yeah, not just paranormal world, but fair to say that's human nature.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and that's what he said. You know, it's just human psychology. And it's just the way, you know, we experience our world and our place in it.
Sure. Where can people follow your work as far as Carolyn's Creepy Corner, if you want to share information how they can read up on your blog? Is it weekly, monthly? How much time do you spend?
It's about monthly, because it's not the only thing I do. So it's carolynscreepycorner.blogspot.com, and I also have a Facebook page for it if people are interested in that. I've also written for the Bent Spoon magazine, and those guys, they are very skeptical, but I've learned so much from Bobby Nelson and Nick Callis and Jason Corbis. They've really pushed me more into critical thinking, and I think I first heard of them through Kenny Biddle.
Right.
So, yeah, I was doing that. I'm now writing for, it's called Paranormal Enlightenment Magazine. I'm in the skeptics corner part of it. But it's, you know, there's believers from all different perspectives writing. So I think it's something for everyone. It's not just for skeptics. It's not just for believers. There's a little bit for everybody.
Cool.
So that's pretty much... I'm also updating my book. It's been a few years since the last one came out, and I've learned so much, again, from networking with people like Kenny, again, Bobby Nelson and Jason Corbis, and a lot of other people. They've pushed me in directions of finding new information to explain some of the things that I didn't know before, and I would like to correct that and update that in my book. I'm leaving certain authors out this time that the science may not have added up like they claimed.
Yes.
Not mentioning any names, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm picking up what you're putting down. So
yeah. I'm also working on a survey that I'm going to be doing with Wes Forsythe. He's the host of Paranormal Filler. And he's going to be in a convention in Erie, Pennsylvania. And we've both kind of been talking about this for a couple of years. I'm co-authoring it with him, basically, because if people see my name and they know I'm a skeptic, they just clam up. Don't want to talk to me. But Wes is, you know, he's very open-minded. And he's definitely a believer. And so, you know, hopefully we'll get more response with that. And just... trying to find out, okay, all these ghost hunting groups that attend these conventions and have booths and stuff, okay, what is your education? What is your background? What's your professional expertise that makes you qualified? Where do you do your research? What websites? What books? You know, just different things that we like to kind of find out. You know, these people are so confident when they get a booth at a convention and tell people what's what and what's the right way. Well, okay, but where are you getting your ideas from? You know?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kenny runs into that quite often, as you know.
Oh, yes, I know Kenny. And actually, I mean, Kenny has been a great mentor to me. He was a great support when my book first came out, and I'll always be grateful for that. So, you know, he throws a lot of stuff at me, and I throw a lot of stuff back at him. But at the end of the day, he's a great guy, and I consider him a good friend.
Yeah, totally. I will feel the same way. So, many plugs to him, and I don't know. What can we expect from Carolyn upcoming in the future?
Like I said, I'm updating my book. I've also been working on fictional writing for some time, and I actually hope to finally get something done with that. So that's taking up some of my time.
Cool.
And that's, you know, is submitting articles for Paranormal Enlightenment, and because I'm lazy, I'll just put it on my blog. I'll just recycle it.
Right.
Hey, I'm not proud. So, so that's and continuing to learn. I listen to different shows like yours and others, and they throw out books recommendations, and so I go online and go get them and see what's going on with them, and you know, I just continue to learn.
Cool. And there's nothing wrong with that, because that's the one thing that we're always throwing out there is never stop learning. And
oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, whenever I come across somebody who tells me they're an expert in paranormal, I go, yeah, okay.
I just laugh at their face.
Yeah, I just, alrighty then, and I back away slowly and try to make sudden movements. None of us know everything.
No.
So. Yes, that's right.
Well, some people think they do, but.
Well, yeah, but
that's another thing. But well, listen, it was great to have you. I hope you had fun. I know we did.
Oh, I did. Thank you.
Yeah. Tim, anything else to add before we go?
No, just thanks for coming on. It's great to get to hear you. I mean, I read your blog on Facebook, and again, I just so I can do it on the air. I can apologize for misquoting.
Oh, it's okay. I told you it was fine. And like I said, I'm probably not the first person who came up with the term, the formula for that. You know, I was just, it's fine. It's all good. And when you said it was Melanie, I love Melanie, so it's all good.
Hey, you know what, though? If we all keep, like, plugging the formula, maybe it'll actually become a standard.
Yeah. The only formula I want right now is just common sense and critical thinking, you know.
That's asking a lot, you know.
Yeah, because common sense is no longer common, I know. So, yeah. But we can put that out there and try.
Right. So that's all we can do is try. So, but, you know, have a good night. Wish your mother well, by the way.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yes.
I really appreciate all the thoughts and the well wishes and the prayers that have gone out for her. So, you know, I'm keeping positive. I'm hoping she'll be, you know, back to herself soon. So.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. So we'll be in touch. You know, we network, you know, we talk, we're friends. So,
yeah,
we'll be in touch, and good luck on your work and your future projects, and we'll be in touch. I hope you have a good night, and, you know, many blessings to you.
Oh, thank you. You guys take care.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
Have a good one. Bye-bye. All right, everybody. Tim, you still with me?
Oh, yes, I'm still here.
All right, good. I didn't hang up on you. I thought I hung up with Garrett earlier because it got quiet. I'm like, I'm like, did I hang up on him?
No, I accidentally hit the mute button on my mic, and I said a couple things. I was like, oh, okay, you know, I don't want to I don't want to interrupt. Maybe, you know, they're in. So then I would try to say something else. I was like, okay. Well, they're talking.
Right.
And then I was like, oh, here's why they weren't hearing me. This little line through the microphone means my microphone is muted.
Uh-oh.
Well, that's why I get paid the big bucks, right?
Yeah. I plan on actually upgrading my my headset and my mic, so I'm going to probably end up doing the same thing at some point.
So yeah.
We all make mistakes. So before we end the show, I want to make some announcements for our upcoming guests, which I'm really excited about. Next week, Tim, we're going to have a renowned UFOologist. His name is James Clarkson. If nobody's familiar with him, you can check out his website. Get it for everybody in a second here. 1 minute. I have it here somewhere.
Well, while you're doing that, I want to add, because I really kind of like the way that this conversation went. You know, I think it's important that, you know, I think when you look at skeptics, like how what we were talking about, it's really good to understand that, you know, we are open to anything. It's the, you know, but you got to bring something that is convincing or valid or logical, for lack of anything of another word. But I, you know, I think questioning and being very using a lot of critical thinking, you know, I can't place the quote exactly, but it's a quote that I like, and it goes something like, you know, I'm not a skeptic because I don't want to believe. I'm a skeptic because I want to know. And I think that says a lot about.
I like the way you put that. That was well put.
Oh, I'm quoting somebody else. I just can't remember who. I seem to have that. I have that problem, don't I? I can't remember who it was. I'm not going to attribute it to anybody just yet until I find it. But I like that because I think what it speaks to is, you know, you don't question things because you don't want to believe it. You question because you really honestly want to know. You have that desire to really know and understand what you're looking for. And, you know, I know sometimes, you know, you and I mean, we're really hard on paranormal stuff and equipment that's used, which is, you know, just terrible. Okay. But it's terrible. But, you know, I'm critical of it because I want to know, you know, is there something? I like the idea, you know, I believe that something that we don't know is out there, and that something could be anything on a grand scale of, you know, ghost to the Easter Bunny. You know, who knows what's out there? You know, it could be anything. It could be anything.
Yep.
But as soon as you concrete yourself or resign yourself to believe it's one thing, then you've, by doing so, have eliminated all the other possibilities that it could be. And, you know, that's a shame because I think ghosts are cool. You know, they could be cool, but there could be something far more cooler out there. There could be something much more grand, much more exciting, much more adventurous. And if you stop and pick something that you believe with no evidence whatsoever of its existence or of its accuracy or its validity, then you've eliminated to yourself the rest of the stuff that could be there.
Yeah, and like I've always said, you know, like me and Tim are kind of balanced. We balance the show because, you know, like I'm more, I guess you could say, of a believer, even though I'm a more objective investigator, I guess would be the word I'm looking for. I don't know. Or I'm becoming more of a skeptic investigator, you know, because I also want to know, and because I want to try to prove this one day, but I want to prove it with the proper methods. I want to prove it with the proper documentation. You know, I want to support it with, you know, evidence, like with proof. And that's where I come from. And I think our show kind of has a cool balance, you know, with that, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's fun.
Yeah. I don't know. We had a great guest. Her name is Carolyn Doherty. You can check her out on Facebook, Carolyn's Creepy Corner. Just put in a little search box there at the top left hand corner. It'll come up right away. You know, she writes really good articles, you know, from both sides of the perspective, and, you know, really great person, upbeat. She's professional, and she won't chew you out like some skeptics do, but, you know, like she said, you know, she tries to tame it with professionalism and how we should all be. But anyway, yeah, with our announcements, I have his website now, so.
All right.
We're going to have Mr. James Clarkson next week. His website is jamesclarksonufo.com, and he's a renowned UFO researcher, because we are having UFO month on Paranormal Talk Radio, which I know we haven't really talked much about UFOs and aliens and stuff, but I think that episode we probably will, because our guest is going to be a UFO researcher. But he is the state director for the Mutual UFO Network in Washington State, and he works closely with two super, very dedicated, well-known UFO researchers, William Puckett and I forget the other gentleman's name, but Davenport, I think, is the name. He works with the National Reporting Center for UFOs or something, and very knowledgeable guy about a lot of the, you know, investigations that they get into with the Trent photos that were popular from the 1950s. You know, we're going to get into a lot of stuff, but it's going to be fun. So that's going to be next week, Tim.
Awesome.
Can't wait. And then, of course, one and the only that we were talking about a little bit tonight, Kenny Biddle returns on the 29th. So we have another cool segment of I Am Kenny Biddle. We're going to have Chris DeCesare on June 5th. We're going to start, by the way, which I can make the official announcement, where Paranormal Talk Radio is going to be very proud to support the event for Chris DeCesare's 30th anniversary, where he had his experience up at the SUNY Geneseo College, you know, where he was on the hit show, I believe Paranormal Witness. If I have the show wrong, I will find out. where he had an attachment, you know, from an entity or spirit, whatever you want to call it. He had an experience, and it followed him for a long time. But he's having a 30th anniversary event where he had this experience, and it's called the... let me get the information right before I get it all wrong and make myself look like a fool. So,
check your sources, man.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing. I'm doing my homework. But I'm really excited, because I've been elected to speak at this event. I'm very pleased that they chose me to speak. I've been itching to speak at conferences for a long time. You know, I've spoken at conferences before. I've been to many lectures and libraries and conventions all over. Been to Maryland, Virginia, you know, all across the tri-state area. But yeah, the event is called the C2D1 Haunting 30th Anniversary Symposium, and it's at the SUNY in Geneseo, New York, October 17th. You know, message me for more info. It is a free event. There's no fee for tickets, which I think is really awesome for them to do. Free,
yeah.
Free is for me, man.
I can afford free. It's in my budget.
Yeah, it's going to be at Erie Hall. There's going to be a lot of lectures. There's going to be five speakers. There's actually going to be a huge reunion between John Tobin and Chip Reichenfall are actually reuniting for the event, which is really exciting, because it's been a while since they've gotten together. I believe since the Lake George event that I went to when they did Parahistory Con 2. I'm not sure. I'm sure they've gotten together privately between that. But we have Dave DeLeese, who's a medium and a big researcher in the paranormal. He not only investigates, but he's also a medium, and, you know, which is interesting to be on, you know, two different sides of the fence. We have Alan Lewis is also going to be there. A whole bunch of other people, Mark Hayes from the PTA. I'm, you know, good friends with him, and he's going to be there. You know, we're expecting a good crowd. It's going to be really, really awesome. So I can officially announce the news that I'll be speaking there on behalf of Paranormal Talk Radio, not just for me, but it's for our show, and we're helping promote the event. And I can't wait. It's going to be exciting, Tim.
Sounds good. I like public speaking. I hope you have a good time doing it.
Yes. I haven't done it in a while. I'm sure I'll be nervous a little bit at first, but I have my mentors there, John Tobin and Chip Reichenthal, and I'm sure they'll support me every bit of the way, along with Christy Cesari. And, he's a great guy. If it wasn't for him, we wouldn't even be doing it. So, I just think it's great for the show, to help, expose the show more. Gives us that opportunity, and but I support the event, because it is a free event, and not many events do it for free.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of them charge a fortune. And then who else do we have? I'm sure I'm going to get more guests in between, but on June 26th, like I had mentioned earlier in tonight's episode, Adam Bly is good friends with this gentleman named Bob Cramner. He's an author of a book called The Demon of Brownsville Road. I had watched an episode of The Exorcist Files, and this gentleman had a horrific experience in his home. He's a former politician of Allegheny County in Pennsylvania. And so he was a pretty prominent person in that area, and had these experiences, and he became good friends with Adam Bly ever since he had those experiences. And I think they've been working together, with his book. He had an infestation going on in his home, and he wrote about it. So that'll be a really intriguing interview.
Yeah, be good to hear.
Yeah. We don't really, dwell into that too much on our show. And, Tim, the only reason I reached out to this gentleman is because I am a huge fan of Adam Bly. You should check him out if you're not familiar with Adam Bly's work. But I respect this guy a lot because he's not like a lot of the paracelebs that are on TV where he's not about his ego. Like, he's really into helping people, and he's got a really good psychology background. Like, he's got a PhD in psychology. He's a minister of I don't know if it's the Catholic or Christian church, but, you can read up on his info on his website. I'll have to send you the link. But he's hardcore.
Mm-hmm.
He's in it for the right reasons. That's why I admire his work a lot. So I can't wait. Next week, be a great show. Anything else to add, Tim, before I say goodbye to everybody?
I hope everybody has a great weekend.
I like what Kenny said. He concludes that he's not a skeptic because he does not want to believe, but because I want to know. Michael Shermer. So... All right, with that said, I wish everybody a great weekend. It was a good show, Tim.
It was good. It was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed listening to her.
Definitely. I'm sure we'll have her on in the future. And I guess that's it. All right, everybody, have a good weekend. And until next time.
Great weekend.
Yeah, see you next time. All righty.
Thank you for tuning into Paranormal Talk Radio. We broadcast live every Friday night at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio. Don't be intimidated by the hosts. We would love to get your feedback about our show, whether it is good or bad. You can leave comments on our Blog Talk webpage or email us privately at paranormaltalkradio@gmail.com. Would you like to interact with other listeners or the host during the show? Register free with Blog Talk Radio to chat with us live during the show. You can also look us up on Facebook, answer questions and polls, and get the latest news. Until next time, see you on the other side.